Hello, hello! It is terror time once again! I am so sorry. This month kind of got away from me, which is stupid. This was premiere month, but I was sick one week, and then my cat had to have surgery, and she's been post-op from that. So she's totally fine now. But yeah, everything kind of got away from me. So I'll be posting a couple different things today in honor of Halloween. So, what I would like to start with is our kind of October special, and it is slashers. So, we're going to be talking about all of our favorite slashers today. So, let's start. Actually, let me see. Trying to decide if we should start with one thing, or if we should start with the other. Yeah, I'll just start. So, we're gonna start with one of the first slashers I ever saw, A Nightmare on Elm Street. And this one's just fucking classic. So, what I've decided is I have to follow a script, or else I completely go off the rails. So, I do apologize for earlier stuff. Okay, so let's get started with A Nightmare on Elm Street by Wes Craven. So, has to be good. In this classic slasher from 1984, we follow some teenagers, of course, as they navigate a strange phenomenon that's killing other teenagers. Tina, one of the teenagers, wakes up from a nightmare where she is attacked by a disfigured man wearing bladed gloves in a boiler room. This man appears wearing a fedora and a red and green striped sweater, again, of course. Her mother notices that there are slashes on Tina's nightgown, so that already shows us that what happens in these dreams can come true in the waking world. The next day, Tina meets up with her best friend, Nancy, our final girl, spoiler, and Nancy's boyfriend, a young Johnny Depp. His name in the film is actually Glenn, but we are calling him Johnny Depp. They both revealed that they too were having nightmares similar to Tina's with the same disfigured man. During a sleepover at Tina's house, Tina's boyfriend Rod arrives, and they have some schmexy times. When Tina falls asleep, she starts having a nightmare of the disfigured man attacking her. And while sorry she starts having a nightmare of the disfigured man attacking her. While Rod watches, she is slashed and killed by an unknown force that he can't see, causing him to run. Nancy and Johnny Depp end up finding Tina's body. The next day, Nancy's dad, who is a police officer, arrests Rod despite Rod insisting he's actually innocent. While this is going on at school, Nancy falls asleep during class and dreams of the boiler room and the disfigured man. She burns her arm on purpose on one of the pipes, which makes her wake up, and she has a burn mark on her arm now. Nancy then visits Rod at the police station, where he describes Tina's death as well as his nightmares he's been having, including, guess who? The same disfigured man. Next, we get to that famous scene where Nancy falls asleep in the bathtub and is almost drowned by the disfigured man. She relies on caffeine to stay awake and invites Johnny Depp over to watch her sleep. During a nightmare, Nancy sees the man preparing to kill Rod in his cell at the police station, but he then notices and goes after Nancy, who then wakes up at her alarm clock going off. Rod is then killed in his cell, with it being staged as a suicide. At Rod's funeral, Nancy describes her nightmares to her parents, who then are pretty worried and take her to a sleep clinic. Nancy has a nightmare while at the clinic, where she is able to grab the man's hat and drag it into the real world. It is here that we learn his name, finally. The name on the fedora says Fred Krueger. When Nancy gets home, her mother barricades the house and tells her about Krueger. She states that Fred Krueger was a child murderer, and it's hinted that he did some other terrible things, who killed 20 children, but was then released on a technicality. He was then burned alive by the victim's parents seeking vigilante justice. The mother then shows Nancy the bladed glove that was hidden in their furnace. Interesting place for that. Why did she still have the glove? Anyway. Nancy realizes that Krueger is targeting her and her group of friends because their parents were part of his murder. Later on that night, Johnny Depp falls asleep and is then killed. Another scene that lives rent-free in people's heads. I can only describe it as he becomes a fountain. Johnny Depp is sucked into his mattress and blood and viscera then spew out like a geyser. That's when his parents walk in and see the scene of blood and chunks all over Johnny Depp's bedroom. Nancy then asks her dad, who is over investigating Johnny Depp's house, to break into their house and basically wake her up in 20 minutes, because she's like, okay, we're done. We're fucking done. She rigs up traps and is able to successfully lure Freddy Krueger into the real world. The traps then light him on fire, and she's able to trap him in the basement. Police arrive to discover that Freddy is no longer in the basement. He's actually still on fire and is trying to strangle Nancy's mother. After the dad extinguishes the fire, Freddy and the mom then vanish into the bed. Then he shows up behind Nancy, who realizes he feeds off of fear. So she calmly turns away from him, and he disappears. In the morning, Nancy steps outside to find her friends and her mother are still all alive. When she gets into Johnny Depp's car, yes, he's there, the top comes down and it morphs into being red and green striped. We then see little girls playing jump ropes singing the rhyme for Freddy, which, if you don't know it, it actually lives rent-free in my head. It's 1, 2... Freddy's coming for you. 3, 4, better lock your doors. 5, 6, grab your crucifix. 7, 8, stay up late. 9, 10, never sleep again. If I'm wrong on that, I should have fact-checked that. If I'm wrong on that, feel free to correct me. But anyway, that's where we see that rhyme. Then Nancy's mother is then grabbed by Freddy and pulled through the window on the front door, and that's where we end, with just shit going, just everything going to shit. And that's where Nightmare on Elm Street ends. So the next lecture I actually wanted to talk about is Friday the 13th. This is one that I'm not as familiar with as these other slashers, which is insane to me. I haven't seen this one near as much as I've seen the others, which I should really change that, because it's a very fun movie. These slasher movies are very fun. Yeah, I wrote here, I actually haven't seen this in a very long time, so I'm excited to cover it today. All right. So this 1980 movie takes place at a summer camp at Crystal Lake, again, of course. The camp originally was closed due to a tragic drowning incident. The counselors now are trying to get the abandoned camp set up and ready for campers. Why? It's a whole group of fodder. I wrote that in parentheses. It's a whole group of fodder, LOL. We have counselors Ned, Jack, Marcy, Bill, Brenda, and Alice, who is our final girl, spoiler. We also have Steve, of course. We also have Steve, the owner, who leaves for supplies as a storm rolls in. Again, why? One by one, the teenagers sent to run the camp start to get killed by an unknown killer. Weirdly, it seems to happen when the kids are doing inappropriate things. Schmixy times, if you know what I mean. There are all sorts of fun, gory kills. One counselor, Annie, doesn't even make it to the camp before she's killed. So she is officially our first kill of these kids. Ned is next. He sees a mysterious cloaked figure and decides to follow. I wrote in parentheses, why? In all capital. Later on, we follow Jack and Marcy, who are having schmexy times, while Ned's dead body is in the bunk above them. When Marcy leaves to go to the bathroom, Jack is killed by an arrow to the throat. Marcy is then followed by this killer and is killed with an axe. I'm sorry, if you can hear that in the background, that's my cat playing with a toy carrot. It's a hit. They love the kicker carrot. Anyway. So, yes, Marcy is killed by an axe. Meanwhile, the others are playing a board game. Brenda afterwards returns to her cabin. She is lured outside by the sounds of a little boy calling for help. She follows the voice to the archery range, and Brenda starts to scream after the floodlights flash on. Alice hears Brenda's screams, and her and Bill go to investigate what's going on with their friend. They find a bloody axe in Brenda's bed, and the phone lines are disconnected. Steve then returns and recognizes the killer, who then stabs and kills him. The power then goes out, and Bill goes to check the generator. Alice finds him later, his body is pinned against the door with arrows. Alice then flees to the main cabin. She barricades herself inside, but then the killer throws Brenda's dead body through the window. We do eventually get to meet Mrs. Voorhees, who came to the camp on her son's birthday. She reveals that he was the child that drowned in the lake back in the 50s that originally shut the camp down. The counselors were off having sex, schmecks, instead of watching her son, which led to Jason drowning. She then reveals herself as the killer. We have our final girl, Alice, who gets attacked by Mrs. Voorhees. The two struggle by the lakeshore, and Alice ends up decapitating Mrs. Voorhees. Alice then pushes a canoe to the middle of the lake and falls asleep. In the morning, Jason's decomposing body emerges from the lake to drag Alice in. Police were quickly on scene, so they were able to save her. Alice awakens in the hospital with police and medical staff surrounding her, and that's kind of where we end. Again, leads to many, many sequels. May not touch on all of them. Like, same with Nightmare on Elm Street. Led to sequels and even a remake. Well, so did actually a lot of these, so I don't know if we're going to touch on all of them, but eventually I would like to get to most of them, at least. Because honestly, Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is fascinating. I like that one. Anyway, so that's the end of Friday the 13th. My next one, I'm excited for this one, is Halloween. And I wrote, yes, my time, my boy! This is probably my favorite slasher ever. Again, I started with Nightmare on Elm Street, and that's kind of what opened the doors to me being like, slashers are fun, and, you know, checking them all out. I was a weird teenager. So sorry. But anyway, probably my favorite slasher ever. I love Michael Myers. I even have a tattoo of him on my ankle. Okay, where do we even start? I guess just at the plot. This 1978 classic was directed by John Carpenter, of course. So we have Haddonfield, Illinois, where on Halloween night in 1963, a 6-year-old boy murdered his sister in cold blood. No one knows why he did it, and he will no longer talk, so he won't tell them why. Michael Myers is then committed to an asylum for the brutal slaying of his sister, Judith. We then jump to 15 years later, where we see Dr. Loomis coming to the institution, and the patients are all over the ground. He gets out of the car to unlock the gate and investigate, while a nurse is still sitting in the car. The nurse is then attacked by Michael, and he steals the car. Why does he know how to drive? Not sure. Neither is Loomis or the other doctors. Michael then kills a mechanic for his overalls and steals a white mask from a hardware store, leading to his most iconic look. I got lost a little bit. So, his iconic look is secured. We then see Laurie Strode, the amazing Jamie Lee Curtis in her debut, who is our final girl. Big spoiler. Even though she's the one that Michael starts to stalk, he ends up taking out everyone around her except the kids. But that's jumping ahead. Laurie is a typical bookworm and actually cares about her studies, unlike her friends. We see Laurie dropping off a key to the Myers old house. It hasn't been sold or lived in, and that's where Michael first sees her, and he's kind of enamored with her and her singing. I think he finds her fascinating. Not sure. He doesn't talk, you know. Oh, and the backstory as to why she's dropping a key off is her dad is the realtor trying to sell the house. Good luck, my guy. So Michael finds her interesting, at least. She kind of notices Michael throughout the day, truly stalking her. Of course, it's Halloween night, and Laurie and her friend Annie are babysitting. I wrote here again, of course. Little kids kind... They're babysitting these little kids kind of together. The houses are on the same street, not that far away from each other. Annie is watching the little girl, Lindsay, while Laurie is watching Tommy. I love these kids. Annie is the friend that is the first one Michael takes out. Annie drops off Lindsay with Laurie and Tommy so she can go pick up her boyfriend. She is strangled by Michael in her car before he slashes her throat. Then Laurie's other friends come to visit slash use the house for shenanigans. The guy, Bob, is the first one killed when he goes down the stairs to get a beer, not knowing Michael is in the house with them. Michael then stabs him in the throat with a kitchen knife, pinning him to the wall. Linda is then killed after Michael tricks her into thinking he's Bob, dressed as a ghost with a sheet over his head. And his glasses. His glasses are on him. This is around the time Loomis sees the stolen car and he begins to search the streets for Michael. Yes, Loomis is still here. Laurie is getting concerned, so she leaves the kids in the house and goes to Lindsay's house to check on everyone. It is here that she sees her friends all killed and sees Judith's tombstone in one of the upper floor bedrooms. She runs out of the room to be slashed on the arm by Michael. She then flees back to Tommy's house while Michael pursues her. Michael climbs in through a window and Laurie stabs him with a knitting needle. Thinking he's dead, she checks on the kids and then tells them to hide. Michael comes up the stairs to go after her while she hides in a bedroom closet and the kids are safely locked in the bathroom. She stabs Michael in the eye with a coat hanger. She's also able to stab him in the chest. Laurie sends the kids out into the night to go to a neighbor's house to call the police. Michael weirdly never goes after the kids. Dr. Loomis sees them running out, so now he knows what house Michael is probably at. Meanwhile, Michael gets up and starts to strangle Laurie. When it seems like he's finally going to kill her, Dr. Loomis comes in and shoots Michael. Loomis goes to ask Laurie about things while we hear sirens in the background. When Loomis goes back to the window Michael fell out of after being shot, Michael is gone. The police then surround the home, and that's where we end for now. Again, multitudes of sequels. I have my faves, which are the Green series. We can definitely go over them. Again, I'm not sure if I'll be able to touch on all of them. But yeah, that is where we end with my favorite of all time, Michael Myers. So let me see. Our next one is... Oh, our next one is probably the founder of the slashers. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. One of the original slashers is literally the first thing I have written. This 1974 film starts off with someone grave robbing. I wrote here, excellent start, lol. This grave robber steals several corpses from a cemetery in Texas, obviously, and ties them to a monument to create a gruesome display. Meanwhile, in a van, we have five teenagers again. Of course, they're taking a road trip. Sally, Jerry, Pam, Kirk, and Sally's paraplegic brother, Franklin, are all taking this trip. They stop at a cemetery to look in on Sally and Franklin's grandfather's grave, which looks like it's undisturbed. Looks like it. Then, back in the van, the group drives past a slaughterhouse, which reminds them of Sally and Franklin's family history with animal slaughter. They pick up a hitchhiker. Why? Who actually talks about his family that worked at that old slaughterhouse. This guy turns out to be crazy. I know, who would have thought? He borrows a knife from Franklin and cuts himself. He then takes a Polaroid picture of the group and demands money for it. Okay, but why though? When the group refuses to pay the hitchhiker, he attacks Franklin with a straight razor. The group then forces the hitchhiker out of the van, who then leaves a blood smear on the side of the van. The group ends up running low on gas, so they stop at a gas station. But the clerk there states that fuel is unavailable. Okay, so why again? So instead, they go explore an abandoned house owned by Sally and Franklin's family. Kirk and Pam leave the group. I put here, don't split the party. But Kirk and Pam leave the group to go check out the nearby swimming hole Franklin mentioned. On their way there, they pass by another house that's surrounded by rundown cars and gas-powered generators. Kirk, hoping to barter for some gas, goes to the house while Pam waits for him outside. As Kirk searches the house, he is attacked and killed with a hammer by a large man who appears to be wearing a mask made of skin. Pam then enters the house to look for Kirk, and she stumbles into a room with decaying remains and furniture that looks to be made out of human and animal bones. She tries to run, but the masked man catches her and impales her on a meat hook. The man then starts up a chainsaw, there it is, and dismembers Kirk in front of Pam. Jerry then goes looking for Kirk and Pam and comes by the house. When he enters the house, he finds Pam nearly dead in a chest freezer and is then killed by the masked man. With darkness falling, Sally and Franklin set out to go find their friends. While on their way, the masked man appears and kills Franklin with a chainsaw. Sally runs and the man chases her to the house. Here she finds what seems to be a dead man and woman's corpses. She escapes the house by jumping through a second-story window and flees to the gas station. The clerk seems to want to help Sally, but he then beats her and grabs her up and takes her to his pickup. The clerk drives her to the house, and the hitchhiker shows up, which is when the clerk scolds him for his earlier actions at the cemetery, identifying this guy as the grave robber. They enter the house, and here is the masked man wearing women's clothes, and the clerk identifies the masked man as his and the hitchhiker's brother. The hitchhiker refers to the masked man as Leatherface. There he is. The brothers bring down the old man, known as Grandpa, so they can have him suck Sally's blood after they cut off her finger. Sally then faints. The next morning, Sally wakes up, and the men taunt her and argue with each other. They then resolve to kill her with a hammer. They try to include Grandpa in the killing, but he is too weak for it. Sally actually breaks free and runs to a road by the house, being chased by the brothers. A truck then strikes and kills the hitchhiker brother. The truck driver then attacks Leatherface with a wrench, but he is injured by the chainsaw. The trucker flees while Sally flags down a coming pickup truck. She is covered in blood, so I can only imagine what that driver is thinking. She narrowly escapes Leatherface and hysterically laughs while a frustrated Leatherface swings his chainsaw in the air. And that is where we end. So, I don't know if there's anything to learn from these other than just don't be stupid. There is kind of a sequel remake to Texas Chainsaw Massacre on Netflix, and I don't recommend it. I didn't like it at all. It was interesting, but not good interesting. Anyway, I think that is where we will end our slashers. So, I hope everybody enjoyed that. I know I enjoy talking about them. I freaking love slashers. But aside from that, Halloween is here. October is magical. And I am so excited to continue on with this. So I hope everybody has a great day and love yourselves. The world is better with you in it. And have a magnificent terror time.